Good morning. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamaral Thomas. It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. I see JT there right now. Good morning.
What's happening, man? You doing okay?
A few things. I'm probably doing a little better personally than the economy is doing. We should probably talk about that, even though it's not among our lead stories. Well, let's just get into it, right? So the inflation numbers came out exactly as predicted at 4.2%, bearing in mind that that's the official government rate. It does not reflect the vastly higher increase in costs that the average American deals with his or her expenses. I thought the most notable number, aside from the fact that obviously those inflation numbers are way up and are going to keep going, consumer confidence. Consumer confidence is a key index of how people are feeling about, you know, hey, am I willing to go out and buy something new that I've been putting off for a while? And that number is currently at the lowest level since measurements began 7 decades ago, which means it's lower than it was during the OPEC fuel crisis, lower than after the October 1987 stock market crash, lower than after the 2007-2008 subprime mortgage meltdown. That's low. So obviously psychology is a big part of it, but people are not feeling good about the economy. We have pertinent to that, we have some tea leaf primary results to report as well. But I think this is, you know, there's insouciance coming out of the White House. That's kind of their go-to. But the fact is, inside, they've got to be shitting bricks.
This is fantastic news for people with a conscience. People care about human life. I am firmly convinced there are very few things that are put in the true box, like things that you know as a flat fact are true. One of those things is that right and wrong doesn't exist in reality. Power is one of the things that matters. And for all intents and purposes, leverage is the thing that affects people who are psychopaths. But meaning, imagine for the moment that this wasn't true. Imagine for the moment that the oil prices weren't going to float up, that consumer confidence was fantastic, that Donald Trump could effectively attack without consequence. What would happen? It's that world that I don't want to take place. Meaning, I don't want monsters to prosper without there being a consequence to the fact that they're prospering, because otherwise there's no hedge against their activity or behavior. If it wasn't for the fact that Iran could damage and is damaging the U.S. economy, I mean, you can look at consumer confidence as being one of the reasons. You can look at inflation as being one of the, as you point out, tea leaf sort. Then Trump would continue the attacks. Meaning it's only because of leverage. It's only because that there's a consequence for the population itself that Trump is like, oh, I don't know what to do in this situation. I guess I'll just let it idle. But the problem is idling obviously has consequences, as you can see from the inflation numbers. And by the way, as you point out, and I'll close it on this, the inflation doesn't take into account real things. Like, it doesn't take into account the things that people care about. So energy, food, these are not included in inflation. And as people realize, you buy food constantly and you need energy to exist. It doesn't include those things. So meaning it's worse off than what it actually is showing in just the blunt number itself. And as the war continues, it would only get worse. The White House knows it would only get worse, which is the reason why continuously, but I think CNN counted 37 times where the White House claimed that they were near a deal. They're not. This is going to get worse.
It is only going to get worse. And our other stories all tie into this. The New York Times has a big, long book excerpt exclusively with inside track information from Maggie Hagerman at the New York Times and others talking about the inside debate about the release or lack thereof of the Epstein files. And basically, even as they were saying, well, we don't care about this, the truth is they were meeting in the Situation Room, of all places, to discuss this. The vice president was taking lead, and the fact is that they're worried sick of what the public thinks about this and how it's ripping apart their base. we could talk about that. I mean, to me, the relationship is, you know, this administration is good at expressing an outside view of messaging, like, we're good, look at the reflecting pool, everything's awesome. But inside, they are living in a reality-based world where they're reading the same polls we are. They know the American people and their own base are furious. And so that means these inflation numbers have to worry them. Then we also have the primary results, which are also kind of, you know, provide us with some insights. And I guess we should talk about Iran. I mean, the U.S. and Iran have been trading airstrikes after an American Apache helicopter was shot down. About an hour and a half ago, Jamal, the White House tweeted out or X'd out that the Iranian military had been completely destroyed an hour and a half ago. Now that helicopter went down a couple days ago. The United States, I don't understand. So let me get this straight. We are currently retaliating against a non-existent military using non-existent weapons to shoot down our very real chopper, but they shouldn't have been able to do that because they had a non-existent military. And we're mad because they shot down our helicopter, which was in their airspace bugging them. And we have to retaliate because what nerve they have.
Ain't that something? Like the logic of it is mind-blowing.
I mean, I know I'm not the smartest guy, but what?
It's weird. I mean, but that's, you almost like, I often wonder when American public hears this, what do they think? Because that's, you know, when we look at it, we think to ourselves, well, at least I think for myself, a monsters who started a war of aggression was not able to do what they wanted to do. Meaning given left to their own devices, they would have murdered and turn the place into a basket case, which is psychopathic behavior in general, right? That monster got his nose broken, or at the very least got punched in the nose. An Apache helicopter that has no right to be there got blown out the sky. God bless the people for fighting the invaders. True. And the US is like, okay, this is humiliating to us, so we need to respond. Okay, dude, you shouldn't have been there, right? Like, they have every right to blow you out the sky. God bless them for doing so. From my point of view, you know, it needs to be far more aggressive, but whatever. This is just me. And Trump's response to this is, well, they don't have a military. Okay, obviously they do. And by the way, he said as much in an interview with Kristen Welker. He just lowballed it based on, basically, Trump said 20%. Intel said like 90%. So basically, they still have their missile capacity and the capacity to knock your drones, airplanes, helicopters, and stuff out the sky. The U.S. response to it is absurd. We're angry that in a war zone, an Apache helicopter got knocked out of the sky, so we now need to respond. It's ego. It's hubris. That's all. I guess my question is, how does the American audience view it? I'm very curious on whether they listen to what Trump is saying and it's like, well, yeah, we were obviously defending ourselves in their airspace. Really? Self-defense?
So, well, I mean, you know, I used to ride the subway every day, and there were always... It's rare that you could ride the New York City subway without hearing some crazy person ranting about this and that. And, you know, so you learn to, I don't know, DC's not quite as bad. You learn to tune these things out. I think that's what the American people do with crazy people. They just sort of, they're like, whatever, I have a job to do. I have a house to maintain. I have kids to take care of. I've got aging parents to consider. You know, in all this mess, I mean, for example, yesterday, and there's so much going on that this huge story is probably not going to get any coverage. A big report came out that finds that Social Security runs out of money in 2032, in 6 years. Okay. So at that point, now, of course, I'm 62 years old. And I'm like, of course it's running out the year after I qualify. Of course it is, because that's what happens to Gen X. If nothing changes, unless Congress acts, they're going to have to cut Social Security benefits by 22%. These are the kinds of things that Americans worry about. Even if you yourself are not receiving Social Security, everybody gets old, hopefully, and everybody has old parents and grandparents that they have to worry about. And if they need help, then you're going to have to help them. these are the things people care about. And so they hear the nonsense coming out of, you know, the White House, coming out of Trump, and they do tune it out. They know it's absurd. They know that they're all liars. I think it's a feature, not a bug. I think part of Trump's strategy is to not be credible and to not be, is to make people stop listening to what comes out. It's sort of like 1984, George Orwell, right? You're basically, you know, you get to the point where you just depoliticize the population intentionally, because if they paid attention, they might hold you to account. They might protest. They might vote against you. They might burn down buildings. You know, but that's not going to happen because people are just going to tune out.
Yeah, but that adds, so you add competence to it.
Well,
like as opposed to just being incompetent.
It could just be like, this is one of those things where a lot of people, like on the far left and the far right, they see conspiracies. They think government officials are brilliant and are always plotting and scheming. I'm not so sure, having met some. I think it's more likely that sometimes people sort of fit, they throw some shit at the wall and it works, and they keep repeating it. That's Donald Trump, certainly, when he used to do his rallies all the time. He would go, and if something got an applause line, he'd be like, mental note, that works. If something doesn't get an applause line, mental note, disregard. Rinse, lather, repeat. I think that's kind of like where, you know, that's kind of what happens here. He's not a genius, but he has noticed that the more bullshit there is, the more dispirited the Democrats get, the more owned the libs feel. And, you know, basically, you know, what is the Democratic posture? The Democratic posture isn't we're going to resist. The Democratic posture is, all right, listen, there's nothing we can do right now. We're waiting for the next election. Hopefully we'll get a different result. That's their posture.
True. Then that leaves the public with nowhere to go. So meaning it doesn't matter if the public, we are keeping, the Social Security issue is a real issue. That would be something that people, you would think, would care about.
Yeah, it's our money. We paid into it. It's ours.
True. If we're not willing to burn the White House down for it, though, then does the government have a point in not doing anything about it?
Yeah, by the way, Trump literally reduced the Social Security tax. So he made this crisis come sooner. And then you hear like, oh, well, if Congress acts, everything will be fine. I'm like, Congress ain't going to act. We had a financial expert named Mitrochel used to come on to our old show on the network, right? And I have to bring him back here. He's great. He's a conservative. But, you know, I tweeted about the Social Security thing yesterday, and he goes, yeah, that's why I'm taking mine out earlier than I planned to.
I know Mitch. I know him. Yeah, he's him and I used to fight. We fight all the time. He's so cool.
He's great. Cool. Yeah, I love him, even though we don't
agree. Nice guy.
But yeah, he's right. Take your money out now, right? I mean, really.
We are not willing as a country to burn the White House down in order to protect certain things. So what's the point? Like, meaning the only reason your political actors do anything is because they feel compelled to do so. Whether this is like, for one, they don't care about Social Security because they don't use Social Security or they don't need it. Right. There's that. Meaning the people who are putting it in office are effectively rich. They're part of this top 1% echelon that, for lack of a better word, may give voice to stuff, but may not necessarily do something unless they feel compelled to do it. And compelled meaning from the standpoint of, oh my God, we think the hordes are coming, Henry. When Kissinger believed that, you know, when Nixon thought they were going to burn the White House down and they surrounded with buses and everything else. That's when you get a government to respond. And my fear of all of this is that the public is something that you all said. I mean, like when we were having a conversation about, okay, what happens if Trump would have just became God Emperor of the US for life and blew off the elections? What would happen? And you and Robbie basically said nothing. If that's true for a government collapsing, what does it mean for Social Security going belly up? Because I think these things are interrelated. What does it take to get the audience or to get the American public engaged in a way that's just not spectator-esque, but is, wait a minute, you're talking about real world things. You're murdering people for real. You've just snatched a person. You've been killing people in boats. What if we were in boats and being killed? How will we receive this? And now you have
going to happen. It's going to happen, right? I mean, we unleashed this technology on the world. And now, you know, I mean, it's like, look, we started the nuclear arms race. And now, I don't know, 20 countries have nuclear weapons. That's our fault. We could have stopped it. We could have gone to the world. We could have gone to the UN, the newly formed UN after World War II, and said, listen, we've got this technology. You've seen it twice at use in Japan. We don't want to use it. We don't think anyone else should use it. We agree to not use it if everybody agrees not to develop it. And the end, right? Everyone would have said yes, because everyone else was broke. No, the Soviet Union was devastated at the end of World War II financially. Nobody wanted them. It was like the Soviets were like, we got to get these because the Americans have them. Here we go again. Drones, droning boats. I mean, someone's going to decide. The next Hugo Chavez is going to be like, oh, no, you can't pluck me out, me and my wife out of the presidential palace with a bunch of goons. Like, no, we're gonna blow up some pleasure crafts off Miami Beach. That's what we're going to do.
Yep. I'm curious, I mean, but from your point, I mean, the Soviets couldn't trust Americans with that technology. Like, there's no way I would have trusted America with nukes if I was the Soviet Union.
But no, but I'm saying if the United States agreed to transparency at the time in 1945 and said, look, these are horrible weapons. We regret having used them. The world should never have them. We will dismantle our arsenal. We promise not to do it. There will be an international monitoring agency. We will be open to the, we of all people will be even more open to them than anyone else because we have these weapons. We don't want them. You know, we have been to the brink of Armageddon. We're telling you, let's not do this.
You're thinking of a benign,
reasonable, sane, imagine no Cold War, right? Think about the trillions of dollars and millions of lives that would have been saved over the ensuing 50 years, right? Just imagine. I mean, just think of the infrastructure, just how much better our overall human quality of life would be.
Ted, why would you want to rob the CEOs of those sweet profit margins? Seriously, what the hell is wrong with you? Don't you know that they need seven houses? Don't you understand that you cannot threaten to nuke the Chinese if you try to become a benign hegemon? And also, those pesky Russians, like, they're right there in Poland, and they're in East Germany. Do you want them marching through your beloved Paris again because France is not a real country? Come on, Ted. You got to have the news.
By the way, the Marshall Plans that we were effectively using in order to build up those countries, I mean, we were profiting off that stuff. Like, meaning the Cold War was profitable on some level for us.
Oh, I mean, I think we only fought World War II in order to, pry the, to gain entry for, American goods into Western Europe. That's all. It was the only reason. We didn't care about liberating death camps. We didn't care about defeating Nazism. We were like, European market is big. We want access to that. Like, Nazi Germany can't have that. Like, they got to go.
Yeah, and Europe was fundamentally destroyed. And meaning no competition.
Yeah.
There's no competition. No competition. Like, meaning we take this idea that we're exceptional. It's not that we're exceptional. Europe destroyed itself. I'll go further with this, by the way.
We're exceptional in one way, right? Geographically. I mean, yes. We have remarkable protection. We have pretty new soil that, hasn't been like China, cultivated for 10,000 years and there's hardly any nutrients left. You know, those giant oceans, two, basically only two neighboring countries, both of which are vassals. I mean, in a game of Risk, we're sitting pretty.
Yeah. I guess I'm saying we're not exceptional people. We're just people.
No.
Nobody's exceptional. Nobody's special.
Nobody's exceptional.
Yeah. Everybody
who claims they're exceptional, like, Israelis or anyone like that, they're just scum for thinking that,
Yeah. But I'm saying we think that too. We think that. It's in our DNA to think that. Like, meaning when we're looking out at the world right now, when just rando America, Thor Rock hit a rando America, they're not overly responding to the Maduro stuff. From their point of view, yeah, maybe it's not nice, but he had it coming because of hashtag reasons. Like, meaning from our point of view, when we do it, it's okay.
Right.
The same thing is true with war.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not getting this aggressive response, even with the Gaza stuff. And people would hate it when I would say it, when I would have back and forth with people and I would point out there is a difference between seeing flag-draped coffins coming back into the U.S. versus watching pictures of children walking around as skeletons and being murdered. One, you feel bad about. The other one, you do something about. And the one you do something about is flag-draped coffins, because from your point of view, that directly affects you, where the other one doesn't.
True.
I don't think we care. Like, I mean, meaning, I think that we've internalized this.
We don't care enough. It's sort of like it's the way I think about the homeless. I care about them, but do I give them my money? Rarely. Do I bring them into my house? Never. You know.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And the empirical thing soaks into the public's consciousness.
It's like a couple of weeks ago, I was driving on the freeway and I saw a dog running around on the freeway, and I was like, oh my God, I hope no one hits that dog. Am I going to stop and try to save that dog? Fuck no. So, you know, it's like that.
Yeah. Which is sad.
Yeah.
People care, but they don't care. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I guess my thing is the imperial thing soaks into the bones of a society and the way that we look at the world and we look at whether it's our right to make decisions about other countries, in which case the American public, even the media, when they talk about it like it's just a political point. Well, I mean, Trump invaded. Let me give you another scenario. Say for the moment that Trump invaded, took down the government of Iran. What would the public point of view be? It would probably be applause. Look at the strong president who dealt with this issue with Iran.
And he succeeded. I mean, what's terrifying to me about the mainstream press is that they accept the narrative of the hegemon, right, for no reason. I mean, like, literally, like, well, we're attacking Iran because, you know, we're trying to stop them from having nuclear weapons. Okay, so that's not our business. And let's just say they are trying to develop nuclear weapons. We're not the nuclear weapons police. It's not our job. I mean, and we might not like it, but again, it's not our job. Well, we can't tolerate that. It's not for you to decide whether to tolerate it or not. It's like, if they want to have nuclear weapons, they can. The end, right? I mean, so it's like, you know, maybe the IAEA could weigh in on it, you know, but the UN can have something to say about it, but that's it. And so, like, but they keep accepting that, like, and that becomes the framing. Well, we've decided to commit this heinous crime, murder a bunch of people, blow up a lot of private property in Iran, and, you know, basically because we want what we want, but we don't even have a right to want it at all.
Exactly. But the public accepts it. That's like that, and that's what I mean when I say, like, the imperial, like, I know you said, like, Israeli saying they're God's anointed people and how that's effectively scum. This is the whole Nazi thing, right? This, like, we're just somehow better because...
Yeah, the Ubermenschen.
Yeah. Same thing with this. When you look out at a country and you think to yourself, they're fair game. And not just political leadership, but the public itself just kind of says, we don't like them having nukes. Like, who the hell are you?
Yeah, we don't
like one of your allies has nukes that are completely unregistered. Why doesn't that bother you?
We may not need a new system. We may need a new electorate. You know, I mean, you know, seriously. We have a bunch of comments. We should hit those. Let's see. Jack Samuels, thanks for the dollar. Views on the massive anti-migrant riots in Belfast, which seem to be kind of tied into the post-stabbing of the white college kid in Northampton, England, right? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, Europe and immigration is a little bit different than the U.S. Like, where Europe, when they were bringing all those people from the war, let's say the Syrian war and those type of things, and this may not be specific to Belfast, but I'm trying to, my thinking of it in the context of Europe. When I covered the European parliamentary elections, over and over again, people would bring up immigration as being an issue. On the left, the liberals would say, oh, these racist right-wingers are just against immigrants for the sake of being against immigrants. And the right would be more kind of like, this is a problem and these people don't necessarily want to deal with it and it's bringing in crime, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the reality of it is, there is an element of crime that is bought into it because some of the countries in Europe that deal with immigration weren't actually dealing with immigration. They would bring people into the country. Those people wouldn't have jobs. You'd have areas that would just fall into disrepute. And you would have conflict between, let's say, the population versus immigrants, in which case you would get a right-wing element that wants to kick out the immigrants in a population that backs it. In Belfast, if indeed this is being driven from the stabbing, oh man, they just look for an excuse. The person was prosecuted. The system worked the way it was supposed to work. Sure, the cops effed up. True. But they're going against immigration, not the cops, if I understand this correctly. I mean.
Yeah, that's my take as well. I mean, look, the thing is, it's rats in a cage, right? You know, nativism takes off when the economy sucks. We've talked about this with Robbie a lot. I mean, let's face it. If unemployment is, you know, if there's a labor shortage, everyone has no problem finding a job, not just a job, but a good job. You know, if like you're feeling so secure that if your boss disrespects you, you can quit and go find something else. You are totally fine with a bunch of unfamiliar faces wearing some funny clothes from a distant land coming to live next to you. You don't care. You might be like, huh, who's that guy from Burkina Faso? But you're not like pissed. But if you're like, I can't, you know, I've sent out 200 resumes to Indeed and I haven't heard back from anyone. And then you see foreigners coming in and sometimes, you know, getting government assistance, you're pissed. You're like, yeah. I'm not getting anything. So, I mean, yeah, if you want to fight nativism, improve your economy, that's really the best thing you can do.
True. Agreed. But I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other about meaning I don't know the internal details of what is going on internally to generate this. But if it's indeed coming from that, then yeah.
Let's do some more. Manchild, thanks for the $2. Trump's attempts at misdirection are failing as his facade is crumbling. Pulling Vance out of his ass can't save him. Where's a late-term geriatric abortion when you need one?
By the way, you mentioned something else. The idea that they do give a shit about the Epstein stuff.
They internally. Do.
As they should. We should talk about this is another mind-blowing aspect of our government right now. The idea that somebody is throwing their body to protect pedophiles is mind-blowing to me.
Did you read the New York Times piece?
No. Oh, what's the New York Times? No, I haven't seen the New York Times.
Highly recommend that after the show you read it. So basically, here's the thing. Here's the narrative. And if it's false, I would expect some libel lawsuits to be filed against the New York Times. Right. I'm not so sure that's going to happen. J.D. Vance basically convened and headed an emergency meeting of people like Susie Wiles and all these top administration officials to try to figure out what to do about the clamor of people demanding the release of the Epstein files. What they basically found was that in polling, it ranks either number 5 or number 6 among Americans' greatest concerns, but that number rises when you look at MAGA voters. It's more like their second or third greatest concern, and they weigh it heavily. They care about it a lot. So this threatens to tear apart the coalition. Interestingly, Susie Wiles and most of the people at those meetings basically were arguing for all sorts of deflection and misdirection about the files. Like, we'll release some of them, or we will request the grand jury transcripts to be released, knowing, this was Todd Blanche, knowing that the courts will probably not do that because they tend not to release those. So we'll look like we're doing something. They all seem to be speaking for the president. The president very clearly told them he did not want the Epstein files released. He knows that they're going to implicate, at bare minimum, a lot of people who are close to him, and maybe him himself. He wants to sit on them. The main advocate for transparency was Vice President Vance. Vance said, listen, this story is going to continue to percolate. It's never going to go away. The cover-up is only going to make things worse. Like, just tear the Band-Aid off the wound, release them all. Everything will get out. It's going to come out anyway. This way, you'll be the one releasing it, dealing with it, and it'll be able to process through long before the midterms come, and we won't have to, you know, worry about it. J.D. Vance was accused by Susie Wiles of being a conspiracy theorist, saying that, like, there's he's in too deep with the MAGA base. Vance's approach. I mean, Vance. Let's not forget, he got into this business as a journalist, right? That's what he used to be, and then he became a journalistic writer for his best-selling book. A journalist knows that Vance is telling the truth. The proper crisis management is transparency. Unless you can keep the cover up going on forever, you got to be transparent. And, you know, this is not one of those situations where you can keep the cover up going forever. Dan Bongino also was pushing hard for the release. He was really pissed at Pam Bondi and said that she was a dingus and screamed at her and threatened to quit over this. The administration begged for him to remain because they thought that his resignation would make him a hero to the MAGA base at the expense of the president. So there's a lot going on. These are excerpts from an upcoming book called Regime Change. There's going to be more forthcoming excerpts coming up, but this is a blockbuster on the level of like one of those big Bob Woodward books.
I will check that article.
By the way,
Jimmy, I don't know if you've seen the back and forth. Dan Bongino went after Jimmy Dore because Jimmy Dore has been going after him. And basically making the point of, you said you were going to release the files. How are you protecting pedophiles? And this argument seems to be just overwhelmingly brutal, like just in its context. I mean, and using the term pedophile is yada yadaing over some really nasty stuff that not a police chief is protecting, not a prosecutor, but the entire political edifice of the United States is doing any and everything in its power to protect people who are having sex with children. That is mind blowing.
I cannot draw any other conclusion from that New York Times
case. No, it's just mind blowing. And so, it would be weird if the White House was that out of touch.
Well, apparently the president and the people nearest and dearest to him, which is not you, like Wiles, they're in full on, we're running interference for these pedos mode.
Wow.
One thing that's really neat that I'd love to see, and check it out, JT, because I'm about to give you some gospel truth here. Uh-oh. Jimmy Dore's popularity among the right-wing faction that I belong to, like the America Only, the America First crowd, is through the roof. Like, right-wingers by the tens of thousands are rallying around Jimmy Dore with one united voice saying, fuck you, Dan Bongino.
Yep.
It is a beautiful thing to see. Yes, I love it.
Yes, they also seem to think that they could just like bullshit, according to the article, that like, for example, the Pam Bondi fake release, or I have them here on my desk. Well, there's a client list. No, there is no client list. That infuriated Dan Bongino. And Dan Bongino also was personally angry because he's losing millions of dollars in podcast revenue due to being affiliated with the administration.
Wow. I mean, like, for one, if you spend a year or so screaming, we're going to release the files, meaning Dan Bongino, and you get in office and you don't release the files and you get, you know, mush mouth about why you can't release the files and everything else. Yeah, you're going to lose credibility. Like, you've staked your entire, this is kind of like a war, right? You've staked your claim. This is what we're going to do in this war. You either do it or you don't.
Yeah, or in this case, he should have quit. He should have quit.
Yes. Tulsi Gabbard should have quit too. A lot of people should have quit.
Well, she sort of slithered out the door at the earliest.
It shouldn't have been a slither. Yeah. It shouldn't have been a slither.
Nah, true.
I mean, come on, man. You can't stake your entire political reputation on a central premise. I'm Tulsi Gabbard. I'm here fighting for you. I fight for our country. I do this particular stuff. I'm the moral actor in this. And when she gets in, their thought is, She's affiliated with the organization. This gives Trump credibility in regards to not starting wars. And the president is a warmonger, a naked warmonger at that. And you stay and you leave when it's, my husband is cancer, so now I'm leaving. Dude, I'm sorry your husband has cancer. That should not have been your rationale for leaving, given your political disposition. Same thing with Dan Bongino. It doesn't matter if you hurt the president. You have a political reputation. You're a political and you're a social figure.
And he's a patriot. Man, those guys throw the P word around a lot, right?
Oh, but they do.
Patriot. A patriot is someone who puts their country first. What is integrity? Integrity is doing the right thing, even when it hurts you personally. In this case, I don't even think you have to get to integrity, because I don't think Dan Bongino would be any the worse off for having quit. Quite the opposite. I think his podcast interviews revenue would be back up through the roof, right? So this is, he could be leading part of a anti-Trump right-wing resistance. That's the thing. If your guy is championing your cause, then there's nothing wrong with attaching your wagon to him. But when that's no longer true, then you're no longer in favor of your cause. You're just championing a person. And that's a cult of personality. That's not politics.
No, that's not politics. Dan Bongino would have been far better off by putting a knife in Trump on the Epstein issue.
Should have.
And the door going after Bongino is not wrong for this. He should go after him.
Imagine if it was one of your daughters, right? I mean,
yeah.
Right? I mean, so, all right. Frank Friel, thanks for the fiber. What do you think went through Trump's mind when he was getting booed mercilessly at Madison Square Garden?
He's a narcissist. I don't know if anything went through his mind. I don't know.
Well, he had to know. He had to know. Had to know.
You think it hurt?
If you're a human, I mean, he loves praise, right? So he's even fake praise. So it's got to be, it's not nice, right? But then, like, why subject yourself to it, right? Why not go attend an event? By the way, just parenthetically, speaking of sports, the World Cup, man, what a shit show. Three countries have had their teams banned from attending, going to the U.S. That's contrary. By the way, the FIFA director, is basically good buds with Trump. He has visited the White House more often than any world leader, including Netanyahu or Zelensky. He's been there all the time, right? And so even being obsequious and a lick spittle doesn't seem to have done any good whatsoever. FIFA requires its hosts to admit all comers and to make the visa regime easy. They didn't do that. So not everyone can attend. It's not the World Cup if everyone's not there, is it?
It's a betrayal. It's a betrayal. It's a failing and a betrayal of his responsibility. In fact, I would make an argument that every last one of those countries, meaning all of the countries, should leave. Why are you participating in an event that the rest of your compatriots can participate in? Meaning this should be a collective entity of sorts. You're not letting our refs in. So all of the refs should say, F off, we're not doing this. You're not letting certain teams in. All of the teams should say, we're not participating. Meaning it should be a collective in the way that they're dealing with this. This is outrageous behavior. It's just outrageous.
Agreed. Joe Park has a point. Plus, politicians also claim their $175,000 salary isn't enough to live off of and want to continue insider trading. Toned up a little, guys. No wonder no one feels bad for these guys. Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah.
And they always vote each other, vote themselves raises. Let's see. Okay. Just filming, really. This is exactly what I don't like about the U.S. Who died and made you the boss?
Yeah.
Good. Thanks so much, Crown Heights Brainiac, for the extremely generous $20. Much appreciated. The U.S. can't be seen as virtuous, he says, when their actions aren't virtuous. It's like telling a vet thanks for your service in Vietnam when you realize millions perish just to have the same party in power.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Jack Samuels, in Belfast, a Sudanese asylum seeker was arrested for stabbing a man. who apparently lost an eye. Right now, vigilantes are hunting down migrants, and thanks for the $4. So that's, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like the whole, like, well, look, I don't understand that narrative. Like, you know, who was the lady on the train, the white lady who was killed in North Carolina?
The one that was stabbed in the neck.
Yeah, by the deranged dude. And it's like, look, he was an illegal immigrant. And he, you know, and he killed this lady. Okay, so deranged illegal immigrants kill ladies, but so do non-deranged, white, cis, male, Ivy League educated, born in the USA, going back to the Mayflower people. I mean, it's like, it's just a weird thing to make people mad. I mean, I understand the economic, like, you know, rats in a cage with shrinking resources getting mad at each other. That I get. I don't really get the whole, like, look, the person got killed and it was a foreigner.
I think their thought is, okay, this person should be in the country. And if the person wasn't in the country, the woman would still be alive. I think that's their issue. Like, you're talking about the Ukrainian woman that was on a train. She was gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And of course, it is also like, hot blonde white woman syndrome, right?
Yeah, it's that too. Yeah, I get the argument. You know, it's like, well, hey, if this person wasn't here, she'd still be alive. So we need to get rid of all of the immigrants. I get the argument. As you point out, white people stab women.
I kind of really solve a lot of problems is all I'm trying
to. No, I get the argument on both sides on that one. It's like, I get the argument.
John Heights Brainiac, the Epstein, thanks so much for another $20 donation. The Epstein list and the Strait of Hormuz situation are both the same. They can procrastinate all they want, but at some point, something will break. Truth is like a lion. Set it free, and it will take good care of itself.
Not in the Epstein case. In the Iran case, yes, because there's leverage being applied to the U.S. economy. In the Epstein case, what's the leverage?
Yeah, I don't see the leverage, right? I mean, there's no protests going on. I mean, I think, well, I do think, you know, a lot of the MAGA coalition, as they say, low propensity voters, in other words, like the dudes for the most part who normally didn't vote and then turned up to register and vote for Donald Trump and for Republicans, those people might just decide to, you know, head back to the sectional and, you know, and see what's on TV instead of voting. That could happen. I mean, you know, we know what low enthusiasm looks like being from the left side of the aisle. It can be a defining force in politics.
Yeah, but low
enthusiasm, it's a huge thing.
But low enthusiasm is, it's people who have been, what's the word I'm looking for? Disabused of political power. Mm-hmm. Like, meaning they've gotten to the point where they're like, nothing we do matters. That's different, though, than we have something that we actively want. And I get the sense that American politics has gotten to the point of just, who is the most low enthusiastic? And the other side wins. That sucks politically. That is a dead political system, if that makes sense. True. That's not a political system that can respond to environmental circumstances. If you have an asteroid that's about to hit the planet, Trump is your guy, with the rest of those incompetent people making decisions on how much money they can effectively drift.
God fucking help us. If fucking Ebola makes it to the United States en masse, God fucking help us.
There's no competence. I mean, but it's one thing if you have a government that's aspirational, where the public is like, we're enthused. There's something we want to do. We're building something. Okay, that's one thing. That's the government.
Will go to the moon.
Yeah, we're going to the goddamn moon. Why? Because it's goddamn there. Like, I would have been one of those people standing on the roof with a sign, we're going to the goddamn moon. That's exciting, right? As opposed to, these people are incompetent. These people are fucking you over. There's nothing they're trying to accomplish short of grift. Those are very different pictures of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Little housekeeping, just a reminder, YouTube, $5 to watch. You can watch for free, but $5 to support the show on a monthly basis as a regular subscriber. $20 to be thanked in the closing credits every month. And $50 gets you that monthly chat that's going to happen at 12 noon on the last Monday of every month, starting at the end of June. That's in a couple of weeks. That'll just be a private chat with me and JT and Robbie. So you'll want to be part of that. And all of you, we appreciate you. Also, TMI coming up at 10 o'clock. and a Q&A show with JT and myself today, because it is Wednesday at 12 noon Eastern time in 2 hours and 14 minutes. Okay, so
I can't do Q&A today.
Oh, you can't do Q&A?
I can't do Q&A today, unless we can push it for 12:30. I can join up around 12:30.
I can't do 12:30, unfortunately.
Well, right. Q&A should still be going on at 12:30.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But I mean, I can't start at 12. I could do a half hour.
I can do it. If you want to talk to the Robbie and the Ted.
All right. So We'll do 12 noon. We'll do it. Robbie and I. Robbie and me from starting at 12 noon, and all three of us starting at 12:30.
That works.
Done. Okay. So now you get to see how that happens. If you are over on Rumble and you want to be part of the $50 thing or the closing credits thing, the 20 and the 50, not respectively, go to deprogrampodcast@gmail.com on PayPal, and please email Robbie over at West Glacier Gaming, also at Gmail. Okay, so let's see. We should talk about primaries. So there were a bunch of votes yesterday. The big headline was Graham Plattner. We knew he was going to win. A lot of people were watching to see by how much he would win and to see whether people would, whether Democrats who were displeased by the revelations about his private life, his allegedly, I would say, yes, Nazi tattoo, and this other stuff came out of whether people would vote for someone who had already dropped out of the race as a protest vote, the way I voted for John Edwards as a protest vote back in 2008, even though he'd already dropped out. That didn't happen. Plattner got 3/4 of the main Democratic primary vote. So now you're seeing the DNC and other party bigwigs circling the wagons around him, like, okay, he's our guy. Let's talk about that first. I kind of thought this would happen. My takeaway here is that Mainers are in this. The Republicans say and do whatever the fuck they want. Look at Donald Trump. We are not going to play the same game of being holier than thou. We're not going to do what we did to Al Franken. We're not going to drum out someone who's a talented politician and give up this possible win against Susan Collins. We're gonna go with Plattner, even though we don't think he's perfect. I know, I get it. I'm of two minds about this. On the other hand, I mean, I think what happened, I think the Al Franken thing was extreme because I don't really think he did much. But on the other hand, if you don't hold your own side to the same standards that you hold the other side, then you don't have those standards, and there are no standards. It's just a race to the bottom. On the other hand, you don't want to let you don't want to miss a chance to take back power. It's a fix, but integrity would have kind of demanded, if you care about Nazi tattoos and beating up your girlfriends, then you shouldn't vote for him. Allegedly, yeah. Beating up your girlfriends.
Still grizzly. Yeah, I guess I agree with you. I mean, it's hard to really say anything about it. I assumed he would win just because, what's the alternative to just lose, if that makes sense? And if they're putting him up against a Republican, I would wager their point of view is, we'll keep the monsters at bay, even if we need to use, quote unquote, a monster to keep the monsters at bay. Now, again, I'm not saying the guy's a monster, nor am I saying he beat his wife. Obviously, this is, quote, alleged, unquote. I agree with you. Democrats were this moral party that cared about people's well-being and stuff like that. I totally agree with you. At that point, integrity matters because you're already in a party with integrity. That's not what we are, right? Like, I know Democrats cannot act as if this guy is somehow a monster and they're just standing by virtuous.
No,
I don't buy the premise.
No, it's just team politics, right?
Yeah,
which I hate. You're just voting for your side no matter what, and there is no end to this. I mean, if more stuff comes out about him, and that's entirely possible, You know, if he turns out he went to a Klan meeting, they're still going to fucking vote, you know, down at the Clavering. He was always there. You know, I mean, he's still going to, I mean, apparently he said all sorts of foul racist shit on Reddit. I mean, look, who hasn't left a paper trail? But, you know, if I ran for office, I'm sure you'd find all sorts of shit about me, but you wouldn't find anything like that. Right. You know, so it's like I used to say about Mel Gibson, you know, like, yeah, well, he was running off at the mouth with anti-Semitic bullshit. It's like because he was drunk. Yeah. But if you pulled me over in a DUI and I was really drunk, that stuff's not coming out. It's because other stuff's coming out, not that. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I hate team politics. There's nothing we can do about it because once it starts, that's it. You're off to, you know, it's just like the Constantinople with the teams, the two chariot teams. And, you know, it starts out as just fandom and then it became the politics of Constantinople and Byzantium. Yeah. And it literally determines everything. And there's, you know, once that genie comes out of the bottle, that's it.
Yeah. But like I say, it's one thing if, look, it's like the Republicans, by the way, had somebody, what, Santos. Santos was the same way, right? He was a captive vote because for the most part, he was corrupt as all hell and he got the seat. And yet he kept his head down, just let him do its thing. For as long as he's going to do it,
yeah, they hated him.
Yeah, they hated him, but they still used him for votes.
They needed him.
He was still a vote. You could hate his guts. He could be toxic, and yet when he goes and makes his vote, the fact that he was toxic doesn't show up in the vote. We used to say that about chess, right? Like if we're playing a game, and I win on time, but I win because I have one pawn and my king is running around the board for like 10 seconds, and it's like, yeah, man, I should have won that game. Dude, it only shows up in the record books as a win or a loss. The fact that my king was, you know, the indignity of running him around the board trying to escape doesn't factor into the win. Right. Same thing is true with this, right? If he wins, the fact that he beat his wife, the fact that he might have gone to clan meetings, the fact that he has swastikas or whatever the hell on his body, it's not going to matter from the context of the vote that he makes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, you can roll Democrat style and be like, big fucking deal. The Secretary of Defense or War, whatever the fuck he is, you know, has like white nationalist tattoos all over his fucking body, right?
Yes.
And is dumb as a stone.
Yes.
You know, and so it's kind of like, that's the thing. Trump, I don't have to, you know, been balls deep in a porn, you know, inside a porn star in at his wife's house, right? Not cool. And then paid her to shut the fuck up. I guess he didn't pay her enough.
He didn't pay her enough.
No.
Yeah, so, you're supposed to be cheap on the porn star when you're trying to get her to shut up.
Right. Yeah, but porn ladies need to get paid. And plus, she was an activist porn star, right? She was like she was basically like the porn union head, kind of.
Yeah.
She's actually a very impressive person.
I think so.
Oh, I mean, she's smarter than Pete Hegseth, that's for sure. Yeah.
But that's not really hard to do. That's not
I'm just saying, I would feel like we were in better hands with her as president. Let me put it that way.
I would feel like we were better hands with a ham sandwich as president.
Yeah, probably.
Being honest.
Sandwich is useful.
President ham sandwich is fantastic.
Yeah, true. Could totally make that happen. All right. Well, yeah, I'm not going to read an ad. It's like they're not offering enough money. Just like Stormy, I need more money for that to do that ad. All right. Okay. Next, in the primaries, Lieutenant Governor Pamela Yvette in South Carolina barely squeaked through despite having been endorsed by Trump, and she will go on in a runoff. She was not able to get to 50%, so there's going to be a runoff June 23rd. Against Attorney General Alan Wilson in South Carolina. And Nancy Mace got destroyed. She came in fifth in South Carolina. So her political career seems to be dead. Although, who knows? Joe Biden came in fourth in New Hampshire in the 2020 primary. So who knows?
I do remember that. Nancy Mace, is that the one? She's not the one that gave the hand job at the theater, is she?
No, that's Lauren Boebert.
That's Lauren Boebert. Okay, Boebert, right.
I like her stuff.
Mace, I know what it was. They put out videos of her or something for Nancy Mace.
Mm-hmm.
it was some kind of like sex scandal or something that they were going after her, but it wasn't her fault. It was used against her or something. I'm not talking about the primary. I'm just saying, I know who Nancy Mace is.
Yeah.
It was something that went on with Nancy Mace. I'm wondering if it had anything to do with the primary, or was there something else going on with the primary that just.
Well, I think the real takeaway here is just that like Trump's endorsement maybe losing a little bit of oomph inside the GOP. Yeah. Also in South Carolina, in California, this is the big results, right? California, the people like Elon Musk and other right wingers have been complaining about the slow vote count in California.
Right.
But now we have a count. We have the results. Steve Hilton, former Fox host, goes on to the general election alongside former Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra. So there will be both a Democrat and a Republican on the ballot this fall, which I like. I don't like the fact that it's possible for one party to be shut out completely due to the ranked choice voting system they have there that's got no party involved. But Hilton's not going to win. Three out of four California voters are registered Democrats. State party is basically a chimera, right? It just doesn't exist. But still, I do think that if you're going to have a party system, each party ought to have ballot access. And, it would be weird if that hadn't happened, I think.
Well, nobody locked them out of the election. It's not a single party system in this case.
No. What happens is that everybody runs, right? So let's say it's like, we're all running for governor. So it's me, it's you, it's Robbie, it's Clovis. And the problem is that, like, let's say that you and me as the resident lefties and Robbie and Clovis as the resident right wingers, there's a way in which they can get proportions of the vote that, even though they are from a minority party, they can end up knocking one of us or both of us off the ballot, right? Because if you just have like 100 candidates, right, where people are like, basically it's like being nibbled to death by ducks, where it's like—
I know, but they still ran.
0.7% of your support, 0.7, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't a situation where they weren't allowed to run. I guess that's my point.
But not in the general.
Right.
Only the top two vote getters win and get to run.
But what's the difference between, but they still got to run. Like meaning they ran and were whittled down to the last two.
Yeah. The two top, well, it's a plural. Two top
candidates, right, where the public chose in this case. I guess I don't take issue with it ended up with two Democrats or two Republicans or two of whatever.
It ended up being one of each, which is good. I mean, my concern is this, right? So let's just say generic Democrat, and there's a shit ton of Democrats on the ballot, right? So that vote gets split literally 100 different ways. Everybody gets one, one dude gets 8% of the vote. The other ones each get 1% of the vote less than 1% of the vote. And then on the Republican side, let's just say there's only two Republicans who run, and one, they wouldn't have done so well if they'd had 100 Republicans, but there's fewer of them, so they don't split the vote as much. And so you can have a scenario where you have two Republicans on the ballot in a state where three out of four voters are Democrats. That's absurd.
Those Democrats shouldn't be greedy. Meaning they shouldn't be that power hungry where you're running 100 people in a Democratic Party versus whatever
the party can't do anything to stop them. Like anyone can run.
True, anybody can run, but it should also be obvious to the people that they're gonna split their votes X number of ways. I understood this when Bush, Bill Clinton, and Ross Perot were running, all three were in different parties. None of them had the same, meaning they had different priorities. So Bush may feel some kind of way about Ross Perot, but Ross Perot is not a Republican. So Ross Perot could tell Bush to F off, I'm trying to win this thing, sucks for you. That's a little different. let's say 10 Democrats.
I just realized we've been talking and I haven't been watching the clock. We're over time here.
Oh, we're 2-1. I'm sorry.
So yeah, we'll see you at 12 noon Eastern time for the Q&A show right here on YouTube and Rumble. Keep it here. TMI show coming up right now. Bye all and ciao. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye.